Once again, we're encouraged by this trend, but this is no time for complacency.
The coronavirus outbreak could be reduced, but it is not time for a celebration. This is Friday, February 21st, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Also ahead, two passengers on that quarantine cruise liner docked in Japan have died. China hints that more foreign journalists could be asked to leave. And we take a deeper dive into Wednesday night's Democratic presidential debate. It all comes your way on today's VOA Asia. The World Health Organization says it's encouraged by the apparent decline in the number of cases of the deadly coronavirus or COVID-19 disease in China. But the UN Health Agency warns against complacency as the downward trend could change. China has reported 47,675 cases to the WHO, including 2,121 deaths. Lisa Schlein has more for VOA from Geneva.
Well, this is no time for complacency. WHO Chief Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus says there is still time to stop the novel coronavirus from spreading widely around the world. He says the number of cases and deaths from the disease outside China is relatively small. Latest reports put that number at 176 cases, including 7 deaths in 26 countries. In the past day, Iran, for the first time, has reported 5 cases and 2 deaths. Tedros says there still is a window of opportunity to contain the outbreak, but warns that window may soon close.
WHO is doing everything we can to seize that window of opportunity, and we urge the international community to do the same. And as I said before, let's not squander the window of opportunity we have.
The WHO is coordinating the global response in fighting the COVID-19 disease. Tedros says the WHO is focusing its efforts on strengthening fragile health systems in developing countries. He says the deadly virus must not be allowed to take root in vulnerable societies.
We're partnering with Africa CDC to coordinate our efforts to prepare African countries for the potential arrival of the virus. That's where we believe in Africa and other continents where we have weaker health systems, the virus could be a serious danger.
Tedros says the earlier patients are tested and treated, the better the results. He says clinical trials of 2 drugs are underway and preliminary results should be available in 3 weeks. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Outside of mainland China, at least 11 people have reportedly died from the virus, including 2 people in Iran and an elderly couple in their 80s who were passengers aboard the Diamond Princess cruise ship, which had been quarantined at the Japanese port city of Yokohama since its arrival on February 3rd. One person has died from the virus in South Korea.
Do not enter, reads the note on the entrance of the Church of Jesus, the Temple of the Tabernacle of the Testimony in Daegu, South Korea. The streets of the nation's 4th largest city have been all but abandoned after what authorities describe as a super spreading event of the coronavirus at the church. The city's mayor told residents to stay indoors after 90 people who worshipped at the church showed symptoms of infection and dozens of new cases were confirmed. The church had been attended by a 61-year-old woman who tested positive, known as patient 31. 23 cases of South Korea's newly diagnosed 31 cases on Thursday were linked to the church, which has since shut the Daegu branch and called for other branches to hold their services online or at home. Korea's Centers for Disease Control and Prevention says the coronavirus epidemic is an unprecedented crisis. South Korea now has 104 confirmed cases and has reported its first death. International authorities are trying to prevent the outbreak from spreading into a global pandemic. Japan on Thursday reported that 2 elderly people from a cruise ship moored near Tokyo had died of the virus. Chinese officials have been pointing to evidence that new cases were declining as proof they are succeeding in keeping the virus largely contained, But changes in methodology for reporting infections has created new doubt about data.
Correspondent Emir McCarthy is reporting there. We invite you to read more on our top story by following us on Facebook, VOA Asia, and the voanews.com website. These are among the top Asia headlines you'll find right now at voanews.com. A deal between the United States and the Taliban to de-escalate the war in Afghanistan will likely include a communication mechanism to prevent military miscalculations during that time period, according to a U.S. official talking with VOA. Two elderly passengers who had been removed from the Diamond Princess cruise ship due to being infected with the coronavirus reportedly died in Japan on Thursday, the first deaths to be reported from the virus-stricken ship. Dozens of people clashed with police Thursday outside a hospital in central Ukraine over government plans to quarantine evacuees from coronavirus at China in that facility. And China is struggling to resume normal trade operations as fallout from the virus outbreak. VOA Asia continues. China warned Thursday that it might take more action against the Wall Street Journal, a day after revoking the press credentials of three of the U.S. newspaper's correspondents over a column that China said was racist. VOA's Kate Pound-Dawson spoke with Marcus Brochley, a longtime correspondent for the Journal in China, and then the newspaper's managing editor before going on to lead the Washington Post.
There are two trends that are converging here. The first is that China has, for a long period of time, been escalating its efforts to control or intimidate foreign journalists in China. At the same time, there has been an increase in the number of foreign journalists in China who are covering stories more closely and aggressively than before. China has been concerned for a long time that the way that foreign journalists cover it can be both embarrassing at times for the regime, critical in their esteem, and they have used efforts like this to try to intimidate journalists. I don't think it works particularly well. The second trend that's converging at the same time is obviously perhaps the more immediate issue, the coronavirus scare in China. The government has come under robust criticism from its own citizens for the way it's handled the coronavirus and for its efforts to control information flows around the spread of the disease by identifying and making an enemy of a U.S. media outlet for a unfortunate headline on a single opinion piece. They've been able to create a distraction and a nationalistic frenzy of online anger, which takes away, I think, in some ways from the government's challenges with its own population over the coronavirus.
How typical is this sort of action of China? Have there been a lot of expulsions in the past?
China's history, since it opened up, you know, China basically closed off to most foreign journalists in 1949 when the communists came to power. In 1979, when the U.S. and China restored diplomatic relations, there were a lot more journalists suddenly in China. And every few years, there would be some journalists that would get crosswise with the Chinese government. The Chinese government in the 1980s and 90s, I think, was somewhat more, I would say, respectful or possibly intimidated by the power of journalists. And so it moved a little bit more carefully when it took on foreign media organizations. They did expel some journalists. Famously, John Burns of the New York Times was expelled at one point. A number of journalists were denied visas or forced out of the country after Tiananmen Square. It would be a mistake to assume there's been no progress in journalism or information flows in China. China is actually a far more information-porous place today than it was in the past, which makes the work that foreign journalists do both a bigger problem and more of an opportunity for the government if the government wants to push back, because the government is pushing back in a way that's visible to its people. Today, if the government expels foreign journalists, it plays into a nationalist impulse, which runs pretty wild on WeChat, which is the main social media platform in China. And so people are aware of what's happening, and the government is actually playing it. You know, it's serving different purposes when it expels journalists like it's done this time.
That was Marcus Brodsley, a former correspondent in Asia, speaking with VOA's Kate Pound Dawson. Happening now in Asia, the U.S. government expects China to honor its commitments to buy more U.S. goods under a trade deal signed by the world's two largest economies in January. That despite the fast-spreading coronavirus outbreak, according to a senior U.S. official. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We turn our attention to U.S. politics. All eyes were on Michael Bloomberg Wednesday night as six Democratic Party hopefuls took the debate stage in Las Vegas. Michael Sullivan reports the billionaire newcomer to the presidential race quickly became a target, as did frontrunner Bernie Sanders.
Bloomberg qualified for the NBC News debate after party officials eased the rules, and he placed second in a poll released Tuesday behind the frontrunner, Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders. A one-time Republican, Bloomberg has spent millions of dollars of his own money on advertising and drawn comparisons with President Donald Trump.
Democrats take a huge risk if we just substitute one arrogant billionaire for another. This country has worked for the rich for a long time and left everyone else in the dirt.
Bloomberg pointed to his background as a successful businessman and former New York mayor.
And I'm a philanthropist who didn't inherit his money, but made his money. And I'm spending that money to get rid of Donald Trump, the worst president we have ever had.
Former Vice President Joe Biden targeted Bloomberg over his crime-fighting policy in New York that targeted people in minority neighborhoods called stop and frisk.
The policy was abhorrent, and it was, in fact, a violation of every right people have.
Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders was described as too far to the left to win the election by former South Bend, Indiana Mayor Pete Buttigieg, among others.
What we are trying finally to do is to give a voice to people who, after 45 years of work, are not making a nickel more than they did 45 years ago.
How to win the election? Senator Amy Klobuchar has an answer.
We could nominate a woman for candidate for President of the United States. I think that might go a long way if we showed our stuff as a party.
The Nevada caucuses will be Saturday, and the next debate in South Carolina next Tuesday. Mike O'Sullivan, VOA News, Los Angeles.
Joining us is VOA national correspondent Jim Malone. Jim, I think this was Bloomberg's first debate since he ran for the New York mayor's office. Is that correct?
Yeah, and I think it showed.
He was
a little rusty.
He won then. What did he do wrong, and how did he come? For people who didn't see it, which is most of this audience, what happened?
Well, he decided it's like someone walking into a bar in the midst of a big argument going on and not really being filled in on what's been going on. Don't forget, the candidates on the stage have been at this for about a year now. They've been through several debates beginning last June. So they've had a lot more experience, and Mike Bloomberg has not been in public office for a number of years, has not had to debate for a long time. And it just shows you how difficult it can be to walk in and immediately face questions and criticisms about your record. You've got to be able to quickly respond and turn the attacks on your rivals.
The whole media story of this is that Bloomberg has advanced in the polls just by spending hundreds of millions of dollars on TV advertisement. And one, I would guess, would have to see how the polls read after last night's debate to see whether or not it made any difference.
Well, I think that Bloomberg has the money. He has somewhat of a message, but it's sort of the old song, you know, can you buy love? I mean, at this point, the one with the energy and the following in the Democratic Party is Bernie Sanders. And there are five or six people scrambling to be the moderate alternative to Bernie Sanders. They're all crowding that lane. You have Bloomberg coming in with his money, buying his way into the polls. But as we saw in the debate, it's going to take more than that to be a real contender. You're going to have to defend your own record, and you're going to have to convince voters why you would be the strongest candidate to take on President Trump.
Can either Sanders or Bloomberg beat Donald Trump in the fall?
Well, the polls show that it's certainly possible. We've seen some latest polls of what we call battleground states, where the president is in some very competitive races with Joe Biden, with Bernie Sanders, with Michael Bloomberg. Some Democrats believe that Sanders, as a Democrat socialist, is not able to win the general election. Sanders argues that he would be able to mobilize a huge army, particularly of younger people, sort of the group that got Barack Obama elected, a new coalition of voters that would sort of come out of the woodwork. But any Democratic analyst you talk to realizes that Democrats have got to find a way to recover some of those white working class voters who defected to Donald Trump in 2016. You can't just do it with a pure Democratic turnout. You've got to find a way to weaken Trump with some of those supporters.
I've heard a whole bunch of pundits saying today that the person who won the Democratic debate on Wednesday night was Donald Trump.
I can understand why people are at least making that argument. We don't know if that'll prove to be true. Look, the president survived impeachment. If anything, he seemed to be able to mobilize, galvanize, and sort of unify his own base behind him over impeachment, which is quite a strength. We've never seen an impeached president run for re-election before. That's a first. And now you have Democrats in this kind of existential debate and battle for the soul of the party. And unless they can sort this out rather soon, it could wind up being Bernie Sanders on track to win the nomination. And then a lot of the campaign would be about, I think, Sanders fending off criticisms of his socialist leanings and Trump going to town on some of his past statements and positions.
Jim Malone is the VOA national correspondent. As always, Jim, it's fun whenever you stop by.
Thank you. I enjoyed it.
Coming up, some former North Koreans want to help lead South Korea. You're listening to VOA Asia.
VOA Asia is on Twitter. Follow us at VOA Asia for developing stories in Asia, perhaps close to you. Our Twitter feed also has updates on programs you can hear and see, with links to easily find them. With VOA Asia, also follow radio program hosts VOA Stevenson and VOA Melman. VOA Asia Twitter. We're always online for you.
This news from VOA Asia. Thailand's constitutional court has ruled that existing laws criminalizing abortion are unconstitutional. They're unconstitutional and ordered them to be amended, paving the way for clearer regulation for reproductive rights. This is VOA Asia. Despite having only a few years' experience living in a democratic country, an increasing number of North Korean defectors are becoming involved in South Korean politics. For the first time, two North Korean defectors are participating in South Korea's legislative election to be held in April. They hope to improve defector status in South Korea and change how South Koreans think of the North, as VOA's Bill Gallo reports from Seoul.
Around 200 North Korean defectors meeting in Seoul, singing a folk song about the future unification of North and South Korea. They're trying to form the first South Korean political party made up entirely of North Korean defectors. Kong Cho-kwan is helping set up the party. He says no one represents the people of North Korea, and that the approximately 35,000 defectors in South Korea are neglected. But defectors could start to get a small amount of political clout this April, when South Korea holds parliamentary elections. Two North Korean defectors are running as members of the conservative opposition. One of them is Ji Song-ho, a former North Korean street beggar who lost an arm and a leg during what he says was an attempt to steal coal from a train. Ji fled to the South in 2006 and is now a human rights activist. Ji says he belongs to the younger generation, and as a defector and a disabled person living in Seoul, he hopes to accomplish many things for Korea. Ji says he was spurred to run for office after South Korea forcibly returned two North Korean fishermen in November. Seoul accused the men of killing their captain and 15 other crewmen. But many defectors said the move amounted to sending the men to almost certain death in North Korea. That incident also motivated Tae Young-ho to enter politics. Tae, a former North Korean diplomat, is one of the highest-profile defectors in years. He recently spoke to foreign journalists in Seoul.
And I want to show to the North Korean people how freedom and democracy works in this country through me. So that is my purpose, you know, to let them be educated.
Since moving to the South in 2016, Tae has been highly critical of North Korea. More recently, though, Tae has also begun criticizing the South Korean government. Specifically, he wants better treatment of defectors, many of whom feel discriminated against and are among the poorest group in wealthy South Korea. Although all North Korean defectors go through a mandatory 3-month training to learn how to live on their own in the capitalist South, many still fall through the cracks. In July, a North Korean defector and her 6-year-old son were found dead in their apartment, apparently having starved to death. Although the government said this week that the average defector monthly income had reached an all-time high, for many it's still not enough. Tae says he wants to make it easier for defectors to get scholarships.
So I want to, you know, give more opportunities to those newly arrived middle-aged people who want to continue their educations, because I'm absolutely sure that one day Korea will be united. And if we are united again, who will go first to North Korea and to do administrations? It must be those people who walk from North Korea.
Tae also accuses some in South Korea of trying to appease the North by not bringing up its human rights abuses. Perhaps predictably, North Korea doesn't think much of Tae. Since he left, North Korean state media have given him the label human scum. It's also not clear just how much power Tae and other defectors will be able to amass in South Korea. Most have aligned themselves with conservatives, who are badly fractured after the 2017 impeachment of conservative President Park Geun-hye. And some analysts have warned that defectors now risk politicizing their message. Bill Gallo, VOA News, Seoul.
Here's another news break from VOA Asia. China cut its benchmark lending rate Thursday, as widely expected, as the authorities moved to lower financing costs for businesses and support an economy that has been jolted by a severe coronavirus outbreak. The epidemic has upended global supply chains and caused widespread disruption to businesses and factory activity in China.
This is Science in a Minute.
Medical professionals have long recommended a healthy diet, exercise, and medications to patients who have high risk factors for maladies like heart disease, diabetes, or stroke. A new study from researchers at the University of California, San Diego, and the Salk Institute for Biological Studies provides evidence that a form of sporadic fasting called time-restricted eating helped improve the health of volunteer participants who had some or all of those risk factors. To follow a time-restricted eating program, you eat your entire daily intake of food over only a certain number of hours each day, and fasting for the remainder of the day. The researchers found that when their study volunteers limited their eating to 10 hours or less each day over a 12-week period, they lost weight, reduced abdominal fat, lowered their blood pressure and cholesterol, and were able to maintain stable blood sugar and insulin levels. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. Thank you for doing that. Thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, our engineer, Keith Holmes, our managing editor, Diane Gao, and the VOA Asia team of Jim Stevenson, Keith Lane, and Doug Bernard. I am Ira Melman in Washington. Enjoy your day.